This is Think Inclusive. I'm Tim Viegas. I want you to do something for me. Take a few seconds and focus on the background noise. Go ahead. I'll wait. That's the sound of hundreds of educators, practitioners, families, policymakers, and more attending the International Early Childhood Inclusion Institute in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, a conference dedicated to fully including learners with disabilities in early childhood education. I've joined numerous sessions today focused on research, family engagement, facilitating systems change, and reflecting on how far we've come as a field to address the barriers to a truly inclusive early childhood education system. And here's my biggest takeaway from attending the conference. If you are an inclusionist, which if you're listening to this podcast, I'm pretty sure you are, there is much to be hopeful about concerning the state of inclusive education in the United States. For this episode, we are featuring my conversation with Meredith Valines and Autumn Baloney, professionals in Oregon that are making inclusive education for young children a reality. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to introduce you to our guests.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to Think Inclusive, our podcast that brings you conversations about inclusive education and what inclusion looks like in the real world. Here's a little bit about our guests. Meredith Valines has over 20 years of working in early care and education and is currently at the Oregon Department of Education in the Office of Enhancing Student Opportunities. Its primary roles have been a classroom teacher in inclusive childcare and preschools, lead teacher in an early childhood special education classroom, itinerant special early childhood education teacher and home visitor, behavior specialist, trainer, and part-time faculty at Portland Community College, having co-developed the Building Anti-Racist Learning Spaces training series and other trainings focused on equity and inclusion. She strives to support educators across the early learning diaspora to be their best selves. She is an Oregon Registry Certified Trainer and has a master's degree in special education from Portland State University. Autumn Baloney's career, spanning over 19 years, is dedicated to supporting children with communication challenges and special needs. Her journey began in kindergarten through 12th grade public schools. For the past 16 years, Autumn has focused intensively on working with children from birth to age 5 and their families, as well as collaborating with staff and community providers who serve this population. Currently, Autumn serves as the director of the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program for the Lynn Benton Lincoln Education Service District. In this role, she oversees and guides various aspects of special education and inclusive practices, leveraging her background as a speech-language pathologist and lead teacher in early childhood special education settings. Autumn has a master's degree in communication disorders and sciences from the University of Oregon, complemented by a professional administrative license from George Fox University. Before we get into today's conversation, a special thanks to the Early Childhood Technical Assistance Center, the Frank Porter Graham Child Development Institute, for collaborating on bringing more content focusing on inclusion in early childhood education. And now, my conversation with Meredith Valines and Autumn Baloney. Autumn Baloney and Meredith Valines, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Thanks, Tim. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, very excited to be able to talk to you today about one of our favorite subjects.
Which is
inclusion.
Inclusion, right.
Inclusion,
early childhood
yes.
inclusion.
Early childhood inclusion, yes.
To get us started, let's just introduce everybody. Autumn, do you want to say your role and what you do?
Yes, I am the program director for the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program for Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln County. So we serve 12 school districts and work with the children birth through 5 in those regions.
Nice. Meredith?
Yeah, I'm Meredith Valines, and I am the Coherence Strategy Specialist at the Oregon Department of Education. I work in the office that houses a number of different programs supporting children with disabilities, early intervention, early childhood special education, our low incidence disabilities program, as well as our pre-K to third grade coordination office and our early literacy initiatives. And so I have the good fortune of trying to achieve coherence across systems and to partner with our local programs like Autumn's to advance practices, policies, and overall focus on continuous growth and improvement across systems so that children experiencing disability can have equitable access to education in the early
awesome.
Years. Very
awesome.
Exciting.
Very exciting and very important. So we're talking about Oregon, and Autumn, you're part of one program in Oregon. So how many programs are there in Oregon?
So there, right, we have the state agency that oversees early intervention, early childhood special education, and that's in the Department of Education. And then we also have a publicly funded preschools, Office of Child Care, all of these other brilliant child caring agencies that are part of the Department of Early Learning and Care. So those are our core partners. And then at the local level, there are 9 regions that provide services for children with disabilities. So like Autumn mentioned, the program that she's in serves a number of school districts, school district regions, right, is another way we break up regions. But each region really ensures that no matter where you live, you have access to high quality services for special education, birth to 5, and then supporting that transition into kindergarten in partnership with school districts.
Autumn, did you want to add anything?
Oh, I was just going to share that through the 9 regions, many of us in our program included subcontract to some smaller regions. So my agency serves 3 counties, but then we also subcontract to an additional 2 counties. And the structure in Oregon has really helped ensure that smaller regions have access to the services and to help alignment between the birth to two system as kids transition into early childhood special education. I know many states have different processes for how they handle early intervention versus early childhood special education, but having a seamless system in Oregon has been really, I feel, beneficial for the kids and families because they come into a system and then they remain in that system until they transition into school. And we're able to work closely with our school district partners as that transition happens. And it just gives us greater opportunity to get to know the partners that we're working with, the families that we're working with, and the children that we're working with so that there's a nice path from when they enter our program at whatever age that may be until they go into kindergarten.
Great, great. Before we get into more of the nuts and bolts of how programs work and how Oregon serves all learners, why is inclusive education, especially in early childhood, important to each of you?
Yes, I have worked in special education for quite a long time. I started my career as a speech language pathologist, and I worked in mostly K-12 settings. And through my experiences in special education, there's definitely been a wave of how services are provided, what services look like. I've been in early intervention since 2008. So my primary workforce has been with children birth to five experiencing disability. And even in that time in that system, there's been a multitude of different service delivery models. And I've always held the firm belief that we're seeking out best practices at all times. And there are certainly, as time has evolved, there are different models of what that scene is. But the research really points us to when children can be served alongside their peers in really high quality environments, we see the greatest gains. And so as I've been working in this field, we've definitely have stand-up special education classrooms in our setting. And we're really working hard with our partners to create more opportunities for children to be served in community settings and collaborating with our community partners. And what we've really seen is that the benefits for the children experiencing disability, as well as the benefits for the other peers in the classroom, and the strengthening of the teaching practices in the classroom, when we can really collaborate with the early childhood special education teachers alongside the general education teachers to create really robust and meaningful academic programs. It just, what happens for those children as they get ready to transition to the next setting, which is kindergarten, is they are on a path to be in an inclusive setting. But while they're spending that time in that classroom, we see more gains in language, we see gains in access, we see gains in peer-to-peer relationships and play. I mean, just there are things that we don't see in a classroom that is siloed with children that just have disability. We need everybody in the classroom for kids to be able to experience the full opportunity and growth that should be available to them. And the growth that we see in the teachers and the teaching teams is also amazing. So it just, I just have such passion for trying to build systems and build plans and help support community partners and help support my staff in making sure that they can support the classrooms to really be inclusive for every single child that walks through their door.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what I love about what Autumn just said is that right. So we're talking about inclusion, which means all kids all the time, all in. But what Autumn, I heard you say, and what is exciting to me about kind of doing this work around inclusive education is that it gives everybody in the community an opportunity to shine and to thrive and to share their gifts and to come together and to benefit and to belong. And so that idea that everybody has this opportunity, right? I think as human beings, we all want to do something, even from early childhood, right? We want to be a part of the group. And so everybody, what Autumn just shared really highlights the the gift of inclusion is that everybody gets that opportunity when we have inclusive education. And that's really kind of where my beliefs and why I think starting in early childhood is important, because kids just naturally like lean, they don't care. I think we probably as adults care more. And I really want to kind of hub kind of my answer or kind of anchor my answer in a story about a little boy. So I have had a lot of experience throughout my career in early childhood. As Autumn mentioned, she's been in this field for a long time, as have I. And I started as a child care provider. I was an infant toddler teacher and had a 2.5-year-old group, 2.5 to like early threes. And it really all started this passion and belief and witnessing of what's possible started with a little boy named Ian. And Ian
came to my class.
And he, like many 2-year-olds, loved to climb, loved to move, loved to be running around and in with his friends, but he wasn't talking. And so we partnered with his family to kind of think about that and understand why he wasn't using verbal language for communication. He got along in the group. The other kids made space for him, and he was doing things with the other kids, and he was also doing things differently than the other kids. And so as we kind of explored that with his family, we were able to get some services in place. And as he turned 3, in this beginning of this new year, the director came to me and asked if I could handle a kid with autism. And I thought, who's she talking about? Like, is there a new kid? Like, what's happening? But she was just talking about this kid who had grown to love in my class, who had already like built an understanding around who I knew. But now he had this new eligibility that came with these different services. And so when she asked that question, it left me speechless, because I never considered not having him in my class. And I think that that's where our adult minds sometimes get in the way of fully including kids. These are kids. These are children in our community. These are family members. These are the future of our state. And we don't know what's possible for them. And so whether that is natural or just by way of the experiences that I've had, I've been able to live the gifts of inclusion since very early in my career. And I've pursued that. I've pursued building more knowledge, more skills. I've walked alongside special educators, speech therapists, and occupational therapists to learn how to ensure that kids like Ian had a place in my classroom and could benefit from what was being offered there. And really, it has led me to this lesson. Like, the research is clear, right? I think it's what, in 15-1, it may be even 100% of all of the research shows that inclusion of children with disabilities leads to better outcomes all of the time. And it's not just outcomes for those kids with disabilities. It's outcomes for their peers. It's outcomes for their families. It's outcomes for their community, for their teachers. We all do better when we are together and we're all in. And so that's really, I think, why inclusion and inclusion early on, when kids just naturally embrace difference and they embrace curiosity and exploration, when that's a part of the how we teach, if we start there, then the ripple effects of that are really powerful into everyone's life moving mm-hmm. forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really encouraging to hear from, you know, representatives from the Department of Education in Oregon. And I'm wondering how the department and is prioritizing early childhood education, specifically around inclusive practices. You know, Autumn, you're working with particular schools or districts in your region. Is the priority for inclusive practices, is that coming from the very top and filtering down to each of those regions, or how does that work?
I think we've really seen a change, at least in the time that I've been working in this field. I have experienced a change in the Oregon Department of Education and the messaging that's coming down, and more than that, the support that's coming down. So I think in the last several years, we've seen deliberate moves in the state to support our programs, to support inclusion. So before, you may, like, as a program, we've always been working on it. Like, we're working with our community partners, we're working by ourselves. But when the state is coming down and saying, this is a priority, like, we are prioritizing that kids are going to be served in inclusive settings. And we definitely see that in the early learning world and the Oregon Department of Education through the creation. It used to be the Early Learning Division, and now it's the Department of Early Learning and Care. So we've seen a lot of alignment across the state through departments that they are setting up to support programs, not just early childhood special education programs, but to align what we're doing with our community partners, with Head Start, with Preschool Promise, with the other programs that are serving children, the CCRNR, so the programs that, you know, that are helping make sure that we have childcare opportunities. So Oregon is a childcare desert. We lack preschool opportunities, but when we can have a state body that's supporting the work that we're doing and helping us align, it makes the work that we're doing easier. It makes the direction clear. And it also gives us a place to go get support. Like when we feel like we're struggling with something or don't know, I really do. I don't know how often this happens in other states, but I really do feel like I can call Meredith at the Oregon Department of Education and say, I need some help with something. And that there are people there that want to and are eager to help me, especially when I'm working toward the same goals that they have for the state. And through that, we've seen the other initiatives that they've brought in and been able to participate in, many grants that we've done for early childhood positive behavior supports, the work that we've done through ECTA. I mean, all of that has come through the state. So Meredith probably has a better descriptions of all the alignment and the work that the state has been doing. But for me, the support has been, it's there and it's present.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that, you know, Oregon is lucky in that we have in early learning, right? This was a priority of the last, now our current governor, but also the last two governors for early education in particular. And we have a whole early learning systems strategic plan. So a plan that brings together every agency that serves children, it's called Raise Up Oregon, to prioritize the needs of children and families in this birth to five space and as they transition to kindergarten. We see those priorities in rule, in statute. We have recognition that student health and safety are the cornerstone of education, and that is birth to graduation, and sometimes beyond, for those students with disabilities who continue to be involved in our educational systems with IDEA services. It prioritizes belonging and wellness. Early literacy is one of the core initiatives of the governor, and focusing on kindergarten transition, as well as reducing and preventing exclusionary discipline practices. And like Autumn said,
those priorities are shared across child serving agencies. So it's a whole systems effort, which is part of why I came to the department. And part of why I really believe in the work, it's because it's not just words, it's also these actions and investments. So at the same time that we created a whole systems plan and these rules around creating wellness and belonging in our schools, birth to 12th grade, we also created significant amount of guidance, and the legislature joined us in investing in education and prioritizing early education through the Student Success Act. And so we have some investments that really lead us forward in this work and center equity as we move.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Autumn, you mentioned ECTA. How is that partnership between ECTA and Oregon, or is it how does that work?
I was not familiar with the early childhood technical assistance work or the programs that they had done until Meredith reached out to me in 2019. I think she was new to the department at that time. And she brought knowledge that she had of the work that they had done and was really looking at the indicators, and they were looking, I don't know if they put out an RFP, but they were putting out some, they were interested in having some states be pilots for working on the indicators. And Meredith contacted me. We had worked together on some other projects that we'd done. We'd been really striving in our communities to get our positive behavior instructional supports to fidelity. And Meredith said, your community is strong. Your community works together. Would you consider putting in an application that we, as the Oregon Department of Education, could submit to see if our state gets selected? And it did. And it's changed really the trajectory for what's happening for kids in our community. So we submitted our application as just one of the counties that I serve, partly because of the relationships that the community members had. And at that time, I was an administrator mostly of that program in Lincoln County. And, you know, coming in 2019, we started the work in 2020. And as we all know, COVID happened. So we had these great plans. We were going to be launching with this early childhood technical assistance and improve our practices and improve our inclusion efforts for children in classrooms. And
the world fell apart.
The world fell apart.
Oh, man.
So we went through the webinars. We were a little unsure of how we were going to do this and what it was going to look like. But what the big thing that ECTA started with and what has really launched our community into working on inclusive practices together was they said, you do this together. You form a community inclusion team. And although we had a strong team and we had really strong community members and we worked well together, we were focused on everything. We were focused on you know, how do we get busing for this? And how do we do this? And instead we just said, we're going to take all those same things that we're focusing on, but really narrow it into inclusive practices, inclusion, looking at what we're doing that is getting in the way of that, looking at what we're doing that's opening doors for inclusion, looking at how many, you know, we're putting up numbers right here. Here's where we are. Here's where we want to be. How many kids are receiving their services in an inclusive setting? So it took our community inclusion team from a community team to a team really focused on inclusion. And we used the preschool inclusion toolbox written by Aaron Barton and Barbara Smith as kind of our discussion points through our webinars with ECTA to really look at policies, to look at practices. That first year, because we didn't have open classrooms, we had more opportunity for some like joint professional development with our partners to really put in supports and make sure we were ready for the next year when kids came in. And what we learned through our virtual lessons is we had to use many more visuals and we had to send home visuals to kids because they're doing things with their parents at home. And if we want them to interact on a screen. So in some ways, it kind of normalized some of the supports that we were utilizing in special education classrooms to our general education partners, because it just became kind of normal practice of what we had to do to engage children with this extra barrier. Every child had a barrier at that point. And in that year, I still don't quite know how, but we increased the number of children that were receiving their services in a community preschool, in an inclusive classroom, virtually, from what we were doing the year before. So that to me was astounding. It was a small increase. And boy, the next year when we continued our work with ECTA and we opened our classrooms back up, that's when we just saw big, big changes happening for our students. And we saw changes in our teaching practices. We saw greater collaboration between the early childhood special education teachers, the speech pathologists, occupational therapists, everyone going into our community sites. We were using the indicators to really look at our environments and set action plans and develop goals for where we wanted to be. And between when we started our work with ECTA, or ECTA, excuse me, and when we ended, which it was supposed to be a two-year cycle, but I think COVID just made every timeline and plan just go a little bit haywire. So we got a little extra TA than we had put in time.
Thanks, OSAP.
Yes, I know. We increased the number of children receiving their services by 28% in our county where we focused. And sorry, that's an emotional thing for me. It was a lot of hard work. It was actually, I don't know that it was hard. Hard is the wrong word. It was deliberate work. It was work that our community partners came together and said, we can do this. And the things that ECTA was pointing out to us weren't necessarily hard. It was about reframing your mindset of what is possible when you just say every single child that comes through that door has a place here. They belong here. They're going to feel happy here. They're going to know that they're loved and they're going to get experiences that every kid should be afforded, that every kid should have an opportunity to experience. And so it was pretty amazing to feel and see that kind of change in our community in preschool spots that already existed. We did not create more preschool spots. We just changed the number of children that were experiencing disability from receiving their education in an early childhood special education class with only children that had disabilities to experiencing their education with their community, with their peers. It's still something that's very touching to me, and I hope we can continue to keep these numbers increasing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and like all this conversation is really reminding me, you like in this series, you spoke initially with Valerie Williams from the Office of Special Education Programs. And what Autumn just said about kids being welcome, loved, and that being visible and intentional and deliberate was exactly what Dr. Williams reflected as a priority for her as she and her husband were looking for a preschool for her son. And so I just think that, like, that is so critical. And, you know, another thing Dr. Williams highlighted is there are a lot of federally funded technical assistance centers, ECTA being one of them. And so when I came to the department, as Autumn mentioned, I knew about ECTA because I'm kind of a nerd. This is like my early childhood education and especially inclusion is like my topic of choice. And so even when I'm not working, I'm always like researching or like passionate about like, how do we make the world better for kids? And right, how do we do that through this vehicle of education and early childhood? And right, there's so many cool things that happen. So I knew about ECTA and I brought that knowledge with me to the department, which then again led to pursuing an opportunity that everybody was like, really? I don't know. And I'm like, no, let's do it. We are ready. We have this huge, beautiful plan that is talking about equitable access for every child before they enter kindergarten. We're ready, but we need some help. Mm-hmm. And so the opportunity to field test the indicators, which, by the way, if you haven't seen them, check them out. They are the most comprehensive set of tools for early learning systems. And what is unique about the tools at the classroom level, but all the way up, is that they integrate culturally responsive practice, trauma-informed care, social emotional learning, and inclusion, right? They really explicitly and deliberately call out practices that are known to advance positive outcomes and fully embrace the gifts of children who have historically and are currently being pushed to the margins and not able to access. And so I really can't say enough good things about the indicators. I know that there are a lot of tools that people can use in their continuous quality improvement efforts. But this tool, especially at the classroom level, really supports everyone involved in the care and education of children in that classroom to see the value and the gifts that are those individual children and their families bring into the classroom spaces, and to do it in a way that is intentional, reflective, and allows teachers to really take on their own learning and continuous improvement, which we know leads to positive change. And so being able to field test that, those indicators with the support of ECTA during a time when the world was falling apart has been a real gift. And, you know, Autumn mentioned, and it's highlighted recently, the Office of Special or the Department of Education and the Health and Human Services Department released a joint policy statement on inclusion of young children with disabilities in preschool, and Oregon's community efforts were really highlighted. I think that that is been the biggest learning, is take time at that community level to align, to look at not just your fiscal resources, but your human resources, and set a clear and intentional mission and vision for belonging of every child within your community. And that's what we've done. And, you know, Autumn highlighted the historic shifts that her, the region that she oversees, the county where this implementation started, they were really hoping for like 10% growth. It really like
We were. We thought that was optimistic.
Like, when I reviewed the numbers, I was like crying. I showed up to their community team like speechless. I was like, so you guys need to have a parade, like something. Like, you should feel very proud of this
because
every percentage point represents an individual child and a family. And that's huge. And so when we think about the impacts of our partnership with ECTA and implementing the early childhood indicators for inclusion, we have seen an 18% growth. And that's historic in the sense that, like the federal data, since the least restrictive environment provision was started, hadn't shifted beyond 5 to 7% over like 30 years.
Right.
We were right there in the line. Yeah. We were right there at that federal like space. And Oregon also has not shifted significantly. But this work is the work. And really it is about, again, like I keep coming back to, what have we learned and where will we move forward? It is in that collective partnering for the benefit of all. And I think that it has greatly improved our general supervision processes for the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act at the department and at the regional level. It is also, right, it prepares us to continue to improve and to really, as the recently released policy guidance said, to reaffirm and reiterate our expectations around inclusion and ensuring that equitable access is available to children with disabilities across our state, even from right the early years moving into kindergarten.
Yeah, this is such important work. And I love that it was like, sure, we will receive this help from ECTA, but then also realizing how beneficial, the technical assistance was and the commitment by, you know, ECTA and Oregon. It was kind of like this perfect, you know, collaboration between all of these different entities in order to make the progress that you did make. So I think one of the lessons that I'm hearing is that, you know, we are really better when we work with other people, you know, across organizations, across departments, across states, you know, the federal and the state level, when we're working together, it really is beneficial. You know, it even goes down to the schoolhouse level when, you know, we're talking about collaborating between general education and special education teachers and other specialists, right? If we are all just doing our own thing, you know, we may have an impact, but it's not as big of an impact as if when we work together.
Absolutely. Well, and I think we can't forget in early learning the importance of our childcare workforce.
Yeah.
We have a lot of children who attend, like their regular education setting is within a childcare, whether it's a center-based or family in-home-based, and really ensuring that there's equitable access to the training supports and coaching supports to be able to fully include a child with a disability to learn and grow as an educator in those spaces is also of critical importance, because we know that the majority of those providers are women of color, and that centering equity and anchoring all of this in our equity priorities really allows us to lean in ways that we haven't before, and think more broadly about the environments that children with disabilities are being served in and educated within.
I think your comment about working together and not forging a path on your own, and then Meredith's sharing of also like what's happening in our care centers and our stand-up home providers, is that what the work with ECTA really helped us navigate is how we align mostly like our human resources to create systems of support so that we're working together. So within the work that we did with ECTA, we were really looking at coaching classrooms and teams. So when you look at a model where everyone is working on the same goal and nobody is alone, nobody is there saying you have to do it on your own. There's a system of, just like I said in the very beginning, I can go now ask for help from the Oregon Department of Education for very specific things. And I have in this journey, both to ECTA and to Meredith and to other people at the state. But now even our classroom teacher in a community preschool has a system of supports that they can go to with their questions. They can go to the coach. They can go to the program coach. And some of those are our staff. Some of the staff have come out of childcare resource and referral. Some of the, so it's really has been a collaboration of everyone coming together, and it, and we've deliberately changed the model of how our program provides services within our community settings to ensure that there's greater systems of support and that there's kind of a ongoing, like, what does the general education teacher bring and what can they help support us in learning and what can we bring and what can we help support them in learning? And it has, because of the dramatic changes we've seen in the one county that we piloted with ECTA, we went a little rogue and just decided to, without the support of ECTA, just because we were wrapping up our trial period with them, we just took this to our other two counties that we work with and said, we need to form a community inclusion team here on our own. And we started using the preschool inclusion toolbox as a way to pose the questions with those community partners, with those preschool providers, those classrooms. And we are now trying to navigate and use the indicators and figure out where we can set up classrooms that will hopefully become demonstration sites for inclusion. Because this is the work we have to be doing, and because we know we have the support from the state, and because I still have relationships with people from ETCA, even though our time has expired with them, technically, they're still there. I still know that I can reach out to the people that supported us and they'll help us grow. And the state is now looking at aligning models to the work that we did. And we're getting support for our team in our other two counties, in Lynn and Benton counties, to do the same work, because you can't stop in one place and say, oh, we made this great change. We have to say, and I'm going to continue to work in that county on the change, but where can we spread it? Where can we push it? How can we bring in more partners? How can we change the thought and the process and the beliefs of the people that make the decisions, of the people that run the classrooms, of the people that hold the purse strings? Everybody has to be on board with thinking about things differently so that we include everybody. And to me, it really doesn't matter if they've been identified with a disability, if they're eligible for special education. I think there are so many kids that walk in classrooms that have experienced trauma and they learn differently too. Or they've experienced any sort of other discriminatory factors and they enter our classrooms differently too. So when we are ready for every child, when every classroom is ready for every child, the opportunities are endless for what they can experience. Mostly I think about the peer-to-peer interactions that they have, and it takes, Meredith and I had talked a little bit before about if we continue to silo children, then we are teaching with each child that they don't belong. We're teaching the typically neurotypical children that those children don't belong in our classroom. And like Meredith said earlier, kids aren't born with that. Kids are like, hey, this kid may not have words, but they want to play. They still want to play with me. So we, the impressions that we have in adults and the decisions that we make as adults impact children from birth on. So when we set up inclusive environments from the beginning, that's what they experience. That's what kids have grow up learning is normal. That's what they, their empathy for children, their patience for others, their everything about the systems that we create needs to be inclusive. We need to start that. We need to start kids on that path, and we need to change our workforce and our beliefs, and just every policy and practice we have needs to be related to how do we get kids with their peers. Sorry, I could go on and on.
No, that's good.
As we are talking, there are so many stories, and I wonder, Autumn, if you have any. Sorry.
You know I do, Meredith.
It's funny because that's exactly what I was thinking, Meredith. How'd you know? You could be my producer.
I have so many stories, and I think the one that's really resonating with me now is because we just had a parent come and do a little testimonial with us as we were advocating for a little bit more funding from our legislators. So we've been doing some work around that. And we had a parent come and share their story with us. And this was a young girl who was born with Down syndrome. And she was got hooked in with our program when her child was 2 months old. And we sent a speech pathologist and a developmental specialist to her house, and they did the initial evaluations with the parent and the initial meeting, and they started services with the family. So she experienced home visiting services with our program from just after birth until age 3. I know some states have access to preschool for every child. We do not currently have that in Oregon, and that's a thing that will continue to be a battle on one of my fronts, is that I think when we can have preschool for every child, then it automatically creates settings where we can have inclusive preschool opportunities. But when we don't have preschool for every child, there is a little bit more of an uphill climb. And this child wasn't eligible for a Head Start setting or didn't have access to a federally or state funded program. So they did end up in one of our early childhood special education classrooms, which we are using best practices there too, but it does mean they're surrounded every moment of their educational experience. They're surrounded by peers who are also experiencing disability. But to that, the parent really shared in that setting, they had grown really comfortable with the teaching staff, knew their child, knew what their child needed. Their child loved, welcomed when they came to school. So when they're going into their pre-kindergarten year, there's an opportunity for them to go to their community preschool. They live in a rural, small community. And the mom had a lot of fear about how is my child going to be received when she walks in the classroom? Are the staff going to be ready for her? What is this going to look like? And you know, we said, we work with community partners all the time. We're going to be there. And when they went to do their registration or their initial meeting, it just happened chance that the providers that we had assigned to that setting were the exact same providers that did her initial evaluation when she was 2 months old at home. So the same speech pathologist, the same developmental specialist. So for mom, that was a comfort. Like these people have known our whole life plan, our whole life trajectory. And they worked really hard with the preschool before the first day to make sure that there were lots of supports in place. And those preschool providers, they are an amazing team. They embraced working with our staff. They brought forth all of their best practices they already know. And they really looked at, like, what more can we do to include this child, to make sure that this education room, this space is hers, that she has ownership in here, that she's not needing to ask people for help or to get help or to, she can do it. She, you know, it was real. And I got to go observe her there. It was amazing. The thing that really pushed from there is this kiddo went to kindergarten this past fall, and the kindergarten is in the same building as the preschool. And when her mom walked in for registration, the staff at the school were almost fighting for. Does your daughter get to be in my kindergarten classroom? They knew her. They knew the family. They knew the supports that helped her be successful in a preschool classroom. They realized that they were very simple things that they could implement in their kindergarten classroom to make sure that she was successful. And the family felt welcomed. The mom shared that, like, this community has come around us. They know exactly what we need. She goes, we walk into the grocery store and everyone knows who my daughter is. Everyone knows who we are. Everyone embraces us, and every space that we go in our school is ready for her. That's what inclusion does. That puts kids in their community setting, in their community space from the get-go. And it helps everyone around them, every other community member, see what it can be, what helps those kiddos thrive and what supports they need. It just, that story to me is like the picture of the difference between being in an early childhood special education classroom where she took a bus from her community to a different community in a school where the community didn't know her, but the family felt really safe because all the staff did, to us moving our staff into that community setting and the family experiencing their community, the people that they see at the grocery store, the people that they work with, the people that they interact with on a day, that they drive by and wave hello to in their car. That became their school community as well. And it speaks volumes to this work and how we can just change the trajectory for that family's life, for that child's life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Phil Strange shared with our coaches, but also our community teams is really how do we move to embrace what Autumn just highlighted, that because you live here, because you're of a certain age, you belong in this classroom. You belong in this community and you belong. And that is just like, how do we get to that space? Because I know also, right, there are some folks who hear stories like that, and there are so many stories like that. And their first thought is, yeah, but mm-hmm. not every child. And I think that when we come together, and what I've learned through witnessing this incredible community level, community driven work for inclusion, is okay, but why not? Like mm-hmm. communities, programs, individual providers, seeing and believing that because we're together, because we have this role and responsibility to care for children and to educate young children, why not? Why can't we create an environment that supports every child? And I think that that is what gives me hope, is seeing that shift in real time, right? It's been, for many, especially for families, it's been a long time coming. But that shift and that readiness, not just in our state of Oregon, but also as we look to other states and learn with other states, that simple shift in the question, okay, but why not? I even remember when we first started this journey with Autumn, like there were a lot of, but how, and in other communities, mm-hmm. like, well, yeah, but we don't have the resources. And really being able to take advantage of some focused, intentional reflection time within the context of these kind of systems level conversations and saying, where did that message come from? Let's do some back checking collectively. Do you see it in your standards for your program or in the federal standards for Head Start or in the state rules? Where does it say that we can't? And how do we get to, oh, I think we can, but of course, in a way that is fiscally responsible and make sure that also the adults are also cared for. And I find that we're in a place where that level of intention and deliberation is becoming more a part of practice. Not just in early childhood where it's built, baked into the pedagogy, but also in our early learning K-3 and moving into K-12 system. So I think we have a lot of opportunities to really sit with that question of why not? Like, yeah. What, you know, and it makes me wonder, what are we missing? You know, I think it always comes back to me like, okay, so we can choose the no, but what would we be missing by doing that? What are the opportunities that we miss? And I think Autumn talked about that. Like, what are the friendships that aren't supported? What are the skills in teachers that are kind of cultivated and grown? Where are we limiting ourselves by saying, but not that kid?
Stay tuned after the break, the mystery question.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Okay, so here we go. Mystery question for either one of you, and I will also answer. If you were a boss of many, which maybe both of you are, would you want them to fear you or love you?
Oh, that's an I think that's an easy automatic.
I think it's an easy one too, but go ahead.
Yeah. Definitely love me. Because I don't think you can have movement in fear. So if those are the two choices, they're there. I don't live in the belief that everyone needs to love me, because I think as a leader, you sometimes need to make hard decisions that maybe aren't always everyone's favorite decision. But I do think if people fear you, you're not going to get that little extra. You're not going to get that really creative idea that's going to like push your whole program, your whole in a different direction, a different positive thing. So through love, and just like when we're working with kids, through love, you get so much more. You can do so much more. You can achieve so much more. So definitely leader of love.
Meredith.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, some people have this tradition of choosing a word of the year to kind of anchor them in what they want to welcome in and what they, you know, how they move through the world. And love just happens to be the word of the year that keeps coming up in this exploration of love. My father passed away this fall, and as a part of his eulogy, I really focused on the power of love. Love is an action word. And just like Autumn said, if action is what you're hoping to achieve, then building a culture that's anchored in loving, in building people's belief in themselves so that they can have space to love themselves, makes room for all of us to love. Right? It's like ripples in the ocean, in the water, right? It moves out of us. And really, I think that, definitely love.
Yeah.
Definitely love.
Yeah.
Is the path forward.
Absolutely. Totally 100% agree. I think of them as a parent. You know, I have three kids, and, I'm constantly evaluating, you know, what I'm doing. Is it, you know, is it fear-based? Is it love-based? And as an educator as well, it's the same type of thing. You know, you can rule your classroom with an authoritarian, so everyone is just scared to death of you, or you can nurture and, you know, have a safe and welcoming environment, and you're going to get people giving you the best that they can when that happens. So I think that was an easy one. That might have been the most easy question we've had so far. So excellent. Autumn Belloni and Meredith Valines, thank you so much for your time on the Think of the Zoo podcast.
Thanks, Tim. We're super excited to be here, and thanks for giving the space and the opportunity to talk about inclusion.
That chime means it's free time. And it's going to be a real quick free time because I have to get back to this amazing conference. Here's what I'd love for you to do. Take some time and download the Policy Statement on Inclusion of Children with Disabilities in Early Childhood Programs. It's something that was talked about on the first day of the conference, and I think it's something that everyone needs to know. I'll put a link to the document in the show notes. Not going to lie, it is big. 71 pages big. Something that I think is really useful is the state spotlights. Stories of how each state are making inclusive education a reality. Check it out and ask yourself who you could forward this to and let them know it exists. That's it for this episode of Think Inclusive. Think Inclusive is written, edited, sound designed, mixed, and mastered by me, Tim Villegas, and is a production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. Original music by Miles Kredich. Additional music from Melody. Thank you to the ECTA Center for collaborating on this series of episodes regarding inclusive early childhood education, and look out for even more episodes for next season. Thanks for your time and attention, and remember, inclusion always works.
Okay, let me close my door because I think my dog is gonna want to.
I know. I just set my dogs up with peanut butter because they're loud.
Tim must have set higher tech sound than I have because he's like, I can hear a little noise, and I think it was the street noise from like. I was like, really? Because I don't hear anything.
Yeah. Well, it's like he said, nice to have a professional audio person.
Well, and that's listening to all of your other podcasts, they all sound so lovely.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Yes, we are recording. Okay. We'll start this, get the party started, right? All right.
From MCIE.